We'll spend this hour talking about love for the people who are not entirely comfortable getting to know other people. Introverts in Love is the title of a new book by Sophia Dembling. She writes the Introverts Corner blog for Psychology Today, is the author of a previous book, The Introverts Way, and figures to be a part of the forthcoming website Quiet Revolution. Sophia describes herself as living a quiet life in Dallas, Texas. Sophia Dembling, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Happy to be here.
It seems like the term introvert is often bestowed by other people. Is it like that for you?
I'm sorry, is often what?
Bestowed by other people. Other people say, well, you're an introvert. It seems like that often happens that way.
Well, I don't know. I think these days people are really claiming it and rather proudly. I hear from a lot of people nowadays that say, oh my goodness, what a relief to know that I'm not weird, that I can actually take this title of introvert. I think when other people use it, it's almost used as an accusation. And we're turning that around and saying, no, this is something to be proud of and to be fine with.
Yeah, you stated it more finely than I did, but that was the point, was that it does seem to be like, oh, you're an introvert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been sort of held against us, and that I think what a good thing that's happening these days is what some of us are kind of calling the introvert positive movement, where people are saying, wait a minute, it's not bad. It doesn't mean we're less successful and we're less happy and we're less optimistic. It's simply a different way of relating to the world.
So, Sophie, I'm curious about how you got to make a career out of talking to and for introverts.
Isn't that funny? I'm a professional introvert.
Uh-huh,
I'm
an
oxymoron. I actually, the first thing I wrote was, I'm also a travel writer, and I wrote an essay called Confessions of an Introverted Traveler for a website called World Hum. And it got an enormous response from people like me who don't travel necessarily to make friends and meet people. We travel to sort of observe the world. And that kind of gave me a hint that maybe there's something there that people need to hear about. And then I started the Psychology Today blog, and it also got a huge response. And so it just kind of was one of those things where I tapped the nerve and thought, okay, this is something people want to hear about.
Was it surprising, the cascade of responses you got?
It was at first, and then I started thinking about it, and there are two things coming together, I think. One, introverts really need validation because of what you brought up initially, that it's been criticized for so long. And two, we're all at our computers. We like to get online.
Ah, that makes things easier for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Truer words were never spoken than the first three you write in the book. Love is complicated. Is it by a factor of many times for introverts?
I think it can be. Meeting people can be particularly difficult for introverts, meeting that person to love, because we're not really interested in meeting people that much for the most part. You know, I like going to parties, but my favorite kind of party is like 20 people where I know almost everybody. So meeting people can be tough. And then negotiating our need for quiet time and for space and for solitude, particularly early in a relationship, can be difficult. Or even later if it's somebody who thinks, like so many people do, that being alone means you're sad or, you know, angry or whatever. It's a rejection. So it can be hard, not necessarily to fall in love and not necessarily to be in love, but to sort of find a comfortable place within an intimate relationship.
You were just talking about people, introverts, not necessarily being interested in meeting other people. Is it that they're not interested, or they just feel uncomfortable? I'm trying to figure out what the...
Well, that's a very key thing. In fact, introversion and shyness are often confused. And the difference is that shyness is fear. You know, that's when people really do want to interact, but they feel a lot of anxiety. Introversion, on the other hand, is motivation. We don't need a lot of interaction. We don't need a whole, you know, 1,000 friends. Most of us are happy with one or two close friends, and that's fine. And so it really is not feeling a need. You know, the more the merrier doesn't make sense to us, really. You know, we're much happier in a smaller group. So it really is not being terribly interested in meeting a lot of new people.
Okay, now I wanted to clear that up at some point anyway. Introversion does not equal shy, so I have the not equal sign between.
It does not equal social anxiety.
Okay. You get a couple of cases in the introduction, including a man in his 60s who is an introvert, but he's with an extrovert. I'm curious about how common it is that introverts do pair up with extroverts.
I thought that was very interesting, because one of the questions I get frequently is, you know, birds of a feather or opposites attract, which is better? And what it turns out, I spoke to about 50 introverts for this book in all different, you know, single and married and newlyweds and oldlyweds and all sorts. And really, of the people who are in relationships, it's about 50-50. between introverts, and introverts, extroverts. And it seems that some introverts really want somebody who's going to hunker down and stay home and be quiet with them. But other introverts are drawn to people who will sort of make their life a little more larger and more exciting and will sort of do the heavy lifting of a social life and sort of let the introvert kind of ride along with that. And that makes them happy. I spoke to one guy who said he dated an introverted woman, and he said she needed kind of babysitting. He was an introvert. She needed babysitting at parties. She needed somebody to look after her. And he said, I can only take care of myself in that case. It was too much for me to try to look after her too. And now he's married to an extrovert, and he really enjoys that because he can go to these parties and she sort of makes it happen, and he can still enjoy and have a good time.
One of the stories in the introduction is about John, the divorced engineer. He talks about the challenge of maintaining confidence in his introversion and independence in a society that pushes the concept of relationship dependence. So a couple questions that come out of this. One is, do extroverts often think that introverts want to get over being introverted?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I keep for my blog, I have what I call my board of extroverts. And these are, you know, group of extroverts who I can go to with questions when I'm like, why do extroverts do that? And one of the questions I asked is,
we're here. Go ahead.
Is we know as introverts how we feel when we've had too much interaction and when we're really kind of reaching our threshold and burned out. How do extroverts feel when they haven't had enough interaction, when they're getting isolated? And one of them said, I feel sad. And that was a big light bulb for me because really it comes from a place of love when they try to draw us out of ourselves and they try to make us be different because they look at us and think, well, if that were me, I'd be so sad.
But it's not sad, she says. Sophia Dembling from February 2015 talking about her book Introverts in Love, The Quiet Way to Happily Ever After. You can see more recent versions of what Sophia's been writing about at the Introverts Corner at psychologytoday.com. We'll come back to the interview about Introverts in Love in a minute 25. The Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. It was the eve of Valentine's Day in 2015 when we talked about love with Sophia Dembling, and she narrowed her focus by writing about a specific section of the population, introverts. If you are an introvert, there's no surprise in hearing about finding other people and falling in love. If you're not, there's a bit of an education in Sophia's book, Introverts in Love, The Quiet Way to Happily Ever After. We head back to the interview now with the usual reminder that because it is a couple of years old, we can't take any new phone calls or emails in this hour. I want to come back again to this, the case listed in the intro of John, the divorced engineer, talks about the challenge of maintaining confidence in his introversion and independence in a society that pushes the concept of relationship dependence, which here again gives us a chance to understand introverts better if we're not introverts already. It's not about being shy. You've already been quite clear about that. But there's a level, too, of not wanting to get into a level of dependence on other people, it sounds like.
No, we all need other people. You know, I think that's a basic human nature. And I also like to differentiate between misanthropy and introversion. You know, sometimes I get introverts who write to me and say, I don't need anybody. I'd rather hang out with my cat. And, like, that's something else a little bit, too. You know, but we do, we are told, for example, you know, that if we like, I like to travel by myself, and my husband is fine with that, but some people are like, really? You know, does that mean you don't like him, or don't you like to travel? And it's like, no, I enjoy it very much. It's just a different experience, and I enjoy both experiences, and in fact need the experience of getting off by myself. You know, and in relationships, it's sometimes difficult for introverts, and it's love relationships and family relationships, too, which is kind of the beginning of it all, to explain to people that when I need to get off by myself, I'm not rejecting you. I'm going towards something that I need, not away from you. And some people, it takes them a while to get that because they think that relationships mean togetherness 24/7. And I would find that oppressive, and I think a lot of introverts feel that way.
Curious, too, do introverts come from families of introverts, or can you have families of many kids and some are and some aren't?
Some are and some aren't, yeah. I think it would be tough to be an introverted parent with a very extroverted child. I don't have children, but, you know, the child that you can't turn off when you need that quiet time,
right.
Because you want to be, you know, encouraging of your child to express him or herself. But it would be, I think, kind of exhausting. One mother told me that she plays a game with her kid in the car. You know, how long can we stay quiet?
How long does that work?
You know, 5 minutes maybe.
You mentioned that you like to travel alone. You are married. And you and your husband are both introverts. Is that right?
Yes. He's probably a little less introverted than I, but his business puts him in contact with people all day long. And I work at home alone. And so we're kind of working that out, because when he comes home, I mean, he doesn't mind talking to me, but he doesn't want to socialize. And by the end of the day, or certainly by the weekend, I need to get around some people.
I was going to ask about that, because I've heard about that situation before where there's a real mismatch in work circumstances. And so it's like, okay, let's go out. I'm ready to get the heck out of this house. And the person who just has spent a whole day out of the house doesn't want to do that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's also over the course of a marriage, you can see your needs changing according to your life situation. I talked to one very introverted man who's married to an extrovert, and he said he needed a lot more alone time when the kids were at home. And then once they moved out and the house quieted down, he was able to, you know, spend more time with his wife and go out and socialize more because he wasn't getting that drain of, you know, interacting with the children as much.
There's a couple of great, you use a lot of other people's work in here as well. You cite a lot of other authors and people who've studied relationships, including John D. Mayer and his great line about fitting a tuba into a duffel bag. What does he mean there?
Well, you know, we're such complicated beings. You know, our psychology is so complicated that there's not going to be necessarily, you know, a perfect fit. You're not putting a duffel bag shaped item into a duffel bag. You're trying to put together all sorts of, you know, angles and neuroses and needs and, you know, dislikes and make them work together. So it's really an ongoing any relationship, this is obviously not exclusive to introverts, an ongoing negotiation to make a relationship, you know, chug along healthily.
Sophia Dembling, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Introverts in Love. There's a chapter in here, we talked about 50-50 in your estimation about introverts married to introverts and introverts married to extroverts. And so there's a chapter, The Five Reasons Why Introverts Are Where It's At. Number two is you get relative silence. There's no particular chatter. Do introverts ever, you mentioned that often the view from extroverts is, oh, they're lonely. But do introverts ever actually get lonely?
Oh, sure. I believe so. I do, certainly. And I think that's something that introverts have to monitor in themselves and start paying attention. You know, as I say, I spend a lot of time at home. I spend a lot of time on my computer. I enjoy Facebook very much. But at a certain point, I'll kind of feel myself getting weird. You know, like where going to the supermarket and having a conversation with the checkout clerk feels like a real, you know, wow, I've talked to somebody. And that's when I know it's time. I need to get out and get some face time with somebody. Also, if I find myself getting really annoyed with people on Facebook, I feel like, okay, you really need some real interaction. So, yeah, I mean, we're all on a continuum. Introversion and extroversion are two sides of a continuum, and we all fall somewhere in the middle. So, you know, some people may get less likely to get lonely, some more. But it takes me a long time to get really lonely, but I do try to pay attention so I don't get weird.
There's the chapter following the top five reasons why introverts are where it's at. There's also five reasons why extroverts are where it's at. There's no guessing games, as you point out. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, they lay it all out there. You know, introverts have this sort of mysterious thing about them, and you have to sometimes draw them out, which I imagine can be frustrating. I try to fight that in my own relationship and make sure that I'm saying what I need to say. But extroverts are going to lay it all out there, sometimes more than you want to hear, and sometimes you kind of have to sort through all, they, you know, in conflict, for example, they tend to sort of dump a lot out there, And it's not necessarily all important. There's the important stuff buried in there, so you have to kind of sort through it. But it's nice to know that, you know, if the extrovert has something to say, it will get said.
And use it right up front, yes.
Mm-hmm. Introvert relationships sometimes have a problem with we tend to be less confrontational, and you can kind of keep sweeping problems under the table instead of dealing with them. And that's something that they have to sort of monitor in themselves to make sure that they're not it's not that you don't fight because there's no conflict, because every couple has conflict. You're not fighting because nobody's bringing up anything.
Will the long silent periods then lead to an eventual blow up, or sometimes does it just peter out without any particular further remark?
You know, it can go either way. I spoke to one woman whose first marriage, she said she really felt, because they were both so introverted and so non-confrontational, they just it fell apart. They weren't dealing with things. She said she tends to shut down. She's kind of passive aggressive in conflict, and she's now married to an extreme extrovert, and he won't let her. He will go and drag her out of what she calls her silent, angry corner and make her talk about it. And she said it's the healthiest relationship she's ever had because of that.
But it sounds like there could be some real conflict in, particularly, an introvert-extrovert relationship if somebody is constantly dragging you out of your comfort zone, because after a while, I mean, there is a comfort zone for a reason.
Well, that's the negotiation of a relationship. You know, speaking again about introvert-extrovert conflict, another introvert I spoke to said she really needs, once the issue, and many of us are like this, I'm like this as well, after an issue is brought up, she needs to go and sit and think about it for a while before the conversation can continue. And her wife knows this. And so they go, she says, if I speak too soon, it's going to get ugly. I need that time. But then once she's had that time, they can have a productive discussion. And that's one reason I think I want this book to be useful. I hope this book is useful, because a lot of times what happens is conflict escalates not because of whatever it is being argued about, but because of, you know, different ways of handling conflict. And if you can get that out on the table right away, if you think about, well, what do I need? I need time to think. And we get that out during a calm talk, then when the conflict comes up, you've already got that figured out. And you can say, okay, now I need this time to think about it. And then I believe that if you need the time to think about it, it is then your job to bring it up again and say, okay, I've thought about it, let's talk. Not make them chase you down. But this is the kind of thing that if you can talk about it ahead of time, you can head off future problems that don't really need to happen.
Sophia Demling, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Introverts in Love, The Quiet Way to Happily Ever After. Sophia writes the Introverts Corner blog for Psychology Today and has written a previous book called The Introverts Way. Coming back to what you were just saying about conflict, though, people who are perhaps new to relationships need to realize that conflict is actually a good thing, because ultimately you realize where the other person is coming from and how each of you deal with conflict and how you process it.
Absolutely. It's very important. And not only that, John Gottman, who is one of the top researchers into marriage and into what makes relationships last, can predict pretty accurately, watching couples deal with conflict, which couples are going to last and which aren't. In fact, how you deal with conflict is actually a really good indicator on the strength of your relationship. And so it does pay to work out and make sure that you find a comfortable ground for talking about difficult issues.
We've had some other guests talk about John Gottman. I've looked at his work. He is phenomenally accurate, isn't he, in predicting?
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah,
it's really something.
So, Sophia, back to you, though. You write about recasting your whole high school experience at some point in your life. From what to what, and what prompted it?
Well, you know, I was an introvert. My best friend was a very pretty, very bubbly, very outgoing, always the center of attention extrovert. And I just felt, you know, as we said when I was growing up in New York, like chopped liver. It felt like nobody could possibly notice me. I got older and reconnected with high school people, via the internet, and found out that, in fact, a lot of guys had noticed me, and even one of my, you know, secret crushes had noticed me and had a secret crush on me, which was annoying to find out, you know, 20 years later. But it really made me think, huh, maybe I wasn't so invisible, and maybe, and that one made me realize, you know, I like to say extroverts sparkle, but introverts glow, And it's easy to think that you're invisible around all that razzle-dazzle sparkle that extroverts can put out. But people do notice, and especially people who would rather be with a quiet person, you know? I mean, not everybody wants to be around all that excitement all the time. And it was really a wonderful epiphany for me.
Well, you write that introverts attract people who want to bask in your warmth. How is that warmth conveyed, though, if you're quiet?
If they give us time, you know, if they'll sit down and talk to us. We're very good listeners. We like to draw people out. we think things through. We tend to think before we speak. We're not going to throw ourselves in the middle of the action, and we're not likely to try to fight for attention. You know, if I'm with a very bubbly extrovert and everybody's coming to talk to her, I'm going to back off, and it's going to take somebody who's going to kind of sit down and be quiet with me and let me talk in the way I'm comfortable that will sort of allow me to show who I am.
So that would indicate certainly that it's a little easier perhaps for introverts to find other introverts because they're looking for the people who are not right there at the center of the attention and the action.
Well, not necessarily. Some are drawn to those extroverts, for sure, and I think some extroverts are drawn to that quiet also. You know, I know quite a few of the people who are married or are in relationships with extroverts whom I talked to said that their extrovert really appreciates the fact that they sort of give them permission to stop and slow down, you know, that the extroverts sometimes don't even notice that they are getting burned out, and the introvert will say, "Okay, look, it's time to sit quietly." And a lot of extroverts are drawn to the sort of the mystique, who is this person? Maybe it's tantalizing to have somebody who's not running after you, you know,
right.
And so they want to kind of draw this person out. But I think that really introverts and extroverts find each other all the time.
So some other distinctions to make here. We've already talked about introversion does not equal shyness. Introversion is not the same as misanthropy. Is introversion insecurity?
No. I mean, like anybody else, you can be insecure. And I think one of the reasons, this is just my theory, that we sort of get into the social anxiety insecurity thing is that we've believed for so long that introversion is not a good way to be. So we get out into a party or whatever, you know, or a social interaction, and we already feel like we failed because we're not able to be what people tell us we should be. And I think once you start saying, okay, it's fine for me to be like this. When I go to a party, I'm likely to kind of stay in one place and talk to whoever drifts by. I don't work the room. And that's fine. As long as I'm having my kind of fun, I don't have to feel like a failure because I didn't have an extroverted kind of fun. You know, I can behave as an extrovert when I need to, but it's not necessary. And once you start, what I say is owning and honoring your introversion, then you don't have that anxiety about going out because you're not going out to try to be something you're not. You're just going out as yourself, and it makes everything easier. That has been my experience personally, is that once I said, oh, I get it, it's okay for me to do that, suddenly saying yes to invitations is a lot easier.
Sophia Demling is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Introverts in Love. And I mentioned earlier that you do use a lot of other people's research in here. Harville Hendrix is referenced here. I'm familiar with his work from Getting the Love You Want. And what is his general thrust on the kinds of people we're going to seek before we realize who we're looking for?
He believes that you're kind of looking to heal your past relationships. That, you know, our early relationships, of course, with our parents have whatever, you know, are fraught in whatever ways they're fraught, and that we tend to look for somebody who's going to sort of help us try to fix what's happened in the past. And I think with introverts, extroverts, and I spoke to a therapist about this, sometimes introverts will get drawn to extroverts who think they're, you know, flawed in some ways, you know, that they shouldn't be introverted because that's what they had with their parents, because I hear from a lot of people who said my parents were always worried. They sent me to therapists. They thought I was depressed, and all it was that I wanted to stay home and read. And so sometimes that's what they'll get into, that kind of thing where they've they're drawn to somebody who, in fact, is not okay with their introversion because they're trying to heal that relationship from the past.
Oh, so the stuff that was a problem with your parents, you're trying to fix that in a relationship, a romantic relationship with an adult.
Exactly. And I believe it's possible as long as everybody's conscious of it. You know, the unspoken is what's going to get you. The stuff you start acknowledging and dealing with can be healed.
You get it all out there for sure. Yeah. Do you think introverts are better able to recognize some of the intoxication that comes with relationships, particularly when they're new?
Oh, I don't know that they're any better or worse. You know, there's a lot of talk, and especially, you know, introverts have been kept down, or feel that they've been kept down and unappreciated for so long that now that they're starting to get recognized, there's a lot of suppressed anger bubbling over, and a lot of, you know, we're smart and extroverts are shallow and they're needy and they're superficial. It's like, yeah, no, not so much. We're just different. And they deal with the world that way, and they're no less creative and they're no less smart and they're no less deep. They just show themselves differently, and, you know, we're all just people. We're complementary.
Sophia Dembling from 2015, talking about her book, Introverts in Love, The Quiet Way to Happily Ever After. The rest of the interview coming up on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're hearing an interview from the day before Valentine's Day 2015 with Sophia Dembling, who still writes the Introverts Corner blog for Psychology Today. She wrote a book called Introverts in Love, The Quiet Way to Happily Ever After. Since it's recorded, we can't take any new phone calls today, but there are some from the original airing. Let's go to Victor in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sophia Dembling.
Morning.
Hi.
Looking at this... through my past, okay, I'm a senior now, so I've got some years to look back over. The group think that says extrovert is great, introvert is not acceptable. I believe that was a significant contributor, supportive element towards my own couple decades of excess alcohol use that I've managed to get free of. But you know, take me and give me alcohol. I'm the most extroverted person in the room, and it's kind of entertaining for a while, but then it gets into trouble.
All right, so I'm sure that's an experience that you've heard about before, Sophia. Thanks for that, Victor. Sophia, you there? Sophia, did we lose you?
Are you there?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Okay, sorry. In my first book, Introvert's Way, I have a chapter called Extroversion in a Bottle. And I think, and particularly for students, for college kids, where drinking is, you know, something to do, I think that is exactly what happens. You try to become extroverted by drinking, and, you know, obviously some people can drink, some people can't. Incidentally, I think I smoked cigarettes a lot longer than I would have because it gave me an excuse to step away from the party. You know, I would step outside for a smoke, and that would be my way of getting out. Once I realized, oh, I just need to be quiet for a minute and could step away or go hide in the bathroom, which all introverts have done, I didn't need that excuse anymore. I just realized, oh, what I really need is just to step away for a second.
That's really interesting, the generational difference, because I would think that your parents' generation probably bummed cigarettes off of people to start conversations.
That could be. Well, I did like hanging out. You know, again, we like kind of smaller groups. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm better in a small group than a large group. And there was always sort of the smoking subset of a party. So I joined that smaller group, and it was kind of more, it was easier for me to have fun amidst the subset.
Sure, yeah, a subset there, yeah. You write about the introvert's dilemma of invitations and, mm-hmm. and what happened, and something happened to you in particular in this area.
Say a little more on that.
I think just that you had gotten to the point where you were refusing all invitations because you just were getting inundated and didn't quite, you sort of dealt with them all like running a scythe across a field of wheat.
Yeah. I believe that particularly if you're an introvert who's trying to meet somebody, you got to say yes to a lot of invitations, which is not not kind of biting the bullet. You got to do it. And some introverts will kind of shut down and not want to get out there. But again, when you start recognizing your introversion, the key to saying yes and to being able to say yes is to promise yourself that when you stop enjoying yourself or when you really feel like you've had enough, you are allowed to leave. And that can be an hour into the party or the event, and that can be 4 hours, whatever works. But if you promise yourself that you can leave when you're ready, it makes saying yes so much easier to do, because you're not committing yourself to staying until the last drunk passes out. You're just going until you've had whatever experience is enough for you.
But then how not go and spend the time looking at your watch and go, oh, just 35 more minutes. Okay, just 20 more minutes.
Well, I mean, if you're at that point, you leave. You know, I mean, really, there's no law that says, you know, there are going to be people being like, oh, you're a party pooper. It's like, you're not really, they're going to continue, the party's going to continue. You're not pooping anybody's party but your own, and you want to. So if you're just dying of restlessness, then don't torture yourself, because if you do, then you're not going to want to say yes to the next one. And especially if you're trying to meet people, you've got to get out there to some extent.
And there's quite a bit in the book about how to get out of your own way when you're an introvert. So once you've chosen a social setting and you're there, I mean, what are some of the things that you recommend that people do or do not do to just sort of get a clear lane between them and other people?
Yeah, we're very good at putting out what I call the leave me alone force field. And that's a very useful tool for us. We know how to be out in public and send out the message that we don't want to talk to anybody, you know, the crossed legs, the crossed arms, the looking at the book, the looking at the phone. When you get out, if you are looking to interact with people, you got to think approachable. You've got to let yourself be approachable. You know, you don't have to be a sitting duck for any chatterbox who wants to pin you down, but you need to kind of put the phone down and put the book down, uncross, you know, try to relax your body and look around you and sort of open yourself up to talking to whoever, you know. And it doesn't mean you have to talk to this person all night, and it doesn't mean that we do tend to be sort of sitting ducks for chatterboxes because mm-hmm. we're such good listeners. It doesn't mean you are obligated to do anything, but you want to make sure that you're not closing yourself off before anything even gets started.
Your wording was particularly effective there. I forget how you phrased it, but it was something about the sense of looking open to conversation.
Exactly. You know, as a radio person, you probably know this, but I mentioned this in the book. Radio people, telemarketers, they know that if you put a smile on your face, it kind of puts a smile in your voice.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that if you go out with approachable in your mind, you're going to kind of put out a more approachable vibe. You know, and think about, I find if I'm leaning on something, it allows my body to relax a little more, and that makes me feel more relaxed, and if I feel more and look more relaxed, people are not going to get this anxiety vibe off of me, and they're going to be more likely to approach me.
It does get you out of that straight up and down statue-like body posture, although you got to be careful you're not leaning against the speaker or something that can fall over.
Yeah, exactly, because that's like, then there's a crash, and all eyes turn to you, and that is just introvert hell.
A couple of people you follow in Introverts in Love talk about the energy to maintain friendships. Do you hear from introverts that those friendships suffer when they're in relationships?
Well, I think that in general, friendships tend to suffer when we're in relationships. I mean, there is actual research into that find that married people actually have fewer friends because they become more dependent on each other. One of the concerns some people have is that we only have so much energy for other people. And so when we're starting a relationship, so much of that energy is going into that other person that it's sort of hard to fit our friends in our lives. But the good news is, and that may be true, I mean, that seems valid to me. The good news is, though, is that once you are in the relationship and starting to get more comfortable, it requires less energy, and there's more room in your life to put those other people back. You know, for example, once you've been in a relationship for a while, it's a lot easier to recharge with the other person in the room. You don't need to get off by yourself necessarily. And so that allows you to, you know, maintain more of your energy in that way.
You write about single people in here, too. Most of the people that are over 35 tend to be single by choice. And just tell us about some of the stories you've gotten from people who just like living alone.
You know, there's another stigma that you know, the introvert stigma is, we're starting to get past that a little bit, or we're working on that. But there are people who really don't want to be in a, you know, a full-time relationship. I know people who keep separate homes. I talked to one young man, a young attorney, who just, he says, I just can't see myself being married. He goes, I have a lively social life. I'm not unhappy, but I can't, you know, I had 4 days with a woman and I'm, you know, solid, and I kind of had enough. And there's a columnist on Psychology Today who's also written a few books, Bella DiPaolo, who writes about living single and the life of living single. And, you know, again, we can't really judge other people's choices. Some people, that's the way they live, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're lonely. They just have a different kind of life.
So if somebody does want to get out there, though, and they decided they don't want to be single, I mean, particularly if you're an introvert, I mean, does anybody like the idea of blind dates? And is that sort of like introvert hell, too, kind of like the knocking something over at the party?
No, I think they're actually fine. One of the pluses for introverts is that once we've met somebody, once we're down to the dating part, that's where we can shine, because that's one-on-one. That's where we don't have to fight for attention, and, you know, we have the space to sort of let ourselves show. Really, I think, and this young attorney said he just loves blind dates. You know, if you approach these kind of dates, it's 2 hours of my life. It's 2 and a half, you know, unless you're sent out on a date with a sociopath. It's 2 hours of your life. Maybe you'll meet somebody you like. Maybe you won't. If you sort of ratchet down the pressure on it and think of it as just, I'm going to spend this evening, you know, or afternoon or whatever, and see what happens.
So it's not an episode of The Bachelor, for example.
Yeah. This is not, am I going to marry this person or not? Now, you can kind of try to get your date more introvert friendly, you know, like doing something as opposed to just sitting across the table from each other. Or, you know, sometimes it's easier for a conversation to flow if you're side by side, maybe walking, rather than, you know, sitting and looking at each other. So you can think in those terms. But I think that blind dates are a good thing, especially from people who understand who you are. And it's worth it, because who knows?
And internet dating, any cautionary notes there that you wouldn't give to extroverts that you do give to introverts, or vice versa?
I think quite a few couples in my book met online. One guy called it the introverted dater's best friend, because it's really great. We tend to be comfortable expressing ourselves in writing. It gives us time to think. You know, we can respond in our own pace. The one caveat for introverts is don't let the emailing drag on forever. If you found somebody who seems interesting, it's very easy for us to just email and email and email. And what that can do is sort of make up, it almost invents an imaginary relationship. And then by the time you meet, if you find the chemistry isn't there, it's almost like breaking up and you haven't even really dated. So you kind of need to pull back a little bit and say, all right, I know I could do this, but I really need to just get out there and meet this person and see if it's worth continuing.
As we as a society destigmatize introversion, though, I just wonder, I mean, you get up front if you're getting in an internet chat with somebody about, hey, I'm an introvert, you know, just be aware of this, or is it something you save for, you know, the 15th or 30th email exchange?
You know, that's an interesting question that I've been getting. I don't see why it can hurt to get it out there, particularly as, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of, certainly, and as people are getting more, you know, information about it, people understand what that means more. But certainly it's a perfectly good getting to know you question. You know, do you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert? And it's a great conversation to get into, because it starts showing a little bit more of who you are in not a shameful way.
I love the chapter, Do You Hide Here Often? How to Hit an Introvert with Pickup Lines, Introvert Pickup Lines from Twitter. I'm not quite sure how to say this, so I won't. How about I go back to my place? Come here and sit quietly in a corner often? There's some fun stuff here.
That's wonderful. I love demos.
The conversations, you've mentioned it, though, a couple times now, that once a conversation starts, introverts are fine. It's just that it sounds like breaking the ice is the real challenge.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, if we have somebody who will take the time and come into our space a little bit and not always expect us to go out into the lively space, that's where we start getting, you know, that's where we can show our best selves, absolutely.
And as you're getting to know somebody, you need to be honest about your need for time alone, but I imagine in some situations you're going to get like, well, why?
Mm-hmm. That's one of the really ongoing that can be an ongoing problem, and you kind of have to hope that you can explain it. And I think, again, as more and more information comes out about introversion, you can certainly hand one of my books to your partner who doesn't get it, or, you know, I have blog posts, I think, that seven things that extroverts need to know about introverts, and open the conversation. And I really think that if a person finds that absolutely unacceptable, you need to really take a close look at the relationship. You know, I mean, this is sort of integral to who you are. Now, you may find that you can, do it in short amounts. Like, I find, for example, if I'm feeling overwhelmed, my husband goes to bed earlier than I do, and so having that down alone time in the evening, late at night, helps me out. So you might be able to sort of squeeze it in. But, you know, for example, I don't think I could be with somebody who was really troubled by my traveling alone. You know, I think that would be a deal breaker for me. And you really do kind of have to think, what's a deal breaker if somebody is not comfortable with what I need as an introvert?
One of the things I was surprised to read about from this book is that as you began to expand the Introverts Corner blog at Psychology Today, you were getting responses of people like, I didn't even realize I was an introvert until I read this stuff.
Yeah, and from people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, it's really astonishing. You know, people think they're just weird or there's something wrong with them. And also, people get confused because being introverted doesn't mean that we can't behave as extroverts, you know, and that's a behavior. I call it my dog and pony show.
Mm-hmm.
I can get out there, you know, I can speak in public, I can be the life of the dinner party, I can do all that stuff. It's just a matter of how much time I need to recover after I've done that. And so people would go, I can go, I'm not shy, I can go out and talk. And so they think they're not introverts until they realize that it's more about the recovery.